Okay.
We're rolling.
Call to order the meeting of South Kingston Affordable Housing Collaborative, September 28th meeting. We'll do a roll call. Cheryl Hartnett here.
Mark Archambault.
Jeff Markle.
Sure.
Chelsea Seeper.
Doug McLean as staff.
Kenny Burke.
Louise Jarro.
Jean Beazley.
Alice Buckley.
Jennifer Kruger.
Okay. The first thing on the agenda is the discussion of responses to the RFP. Which sounds like it's going to be a short conversation.
I informed you that we did not receive any responses to the RFP, so maybe our discussion can be what are some different ways that we can get some responses to our RFP? I think we were a little surprised. What are your thoughts? People that you are maybe, you know, expected to submit and that didn't, and how can we get this, you know, maybe on their radar or make it more attractive?
Who would we expect to respond? What sort of businesses?
I thought that we would get a response from Horsley Witten Group, which is a planning consulting firm. They do environmental engineering as well, but they have a pretty strong local Rhode Island planning arm. Mm-hmm. I also thought that Barbara Sokoloff Associates was going to submit. And then she's a housing specific planner, kind of a niche planner in the state.
She did it the first time when we started this.
Yeah, she developed, so when this was...
2004?
Yeah, it was in 2003-04, they mandated that all the towns go through mm-hmm. a process to develop this. She did a good number of them throughout the state.
Okay.
And she still has an active consulting firm.
Mm-hmm.
And I assumed we might have picked up a couple of regional, consultants that, you know, like, just kind of crossed into their interest, and they would have, you know, thrown a bid, maybe someone from Massachusetts or, you know, the region. But we didn't get any.
Mm-hmm. Would it be possible to talk with the ones you thought would do something and ask why? Because maybe there's something that we could do that they want to have, which probably needs more money.
Or maybe there was something in the RFP they didn't think they could do. You know,
right.
Maybe there was something they just didn't feel qualified
yeah.
to take on.
Yeah. And the first company that you mentioned, South Kingston's used them a lot.
We're doing our comprehensive plan right
now. Yeah, we have an active contract.
So they're working for you, and they didn't say to you guys, we're not interested this time?
They knew.
They definitely knew about it.
Because you said Jeff was aware when it hit the street. So it was a conscious choice for them not to participate. And whether that conscious choice was because of maybe they were overwhelmed with work,
same
and
time
they just
on,
couldn't
yeah.
get another proposal out the door, or... So that the just putting it back out in different timing and maybe a little bit more, hey guys, you know, you should really consider this, might get it done. Or maybe we are able to learn something about it from our contacts there. And Jeff can tell us that, you know, they didn't feel that they had the chops to do what we were
something.
Asking.
Yeah. I mean, I think from my perspective, staff could do a little bit more research for either regionally or just nationally to see which planning firms are doing this kind of work right now and mm-hmm. do some specific outreach to them when the next RFP goes out, say, you know, so that they know that it's on the street.
I think that would be good to try to find out
yeah,
who they are.
Who it is.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing against us, you know, literally sending the RFP to people. We can do that all day long.
Could you do that? Is there a period of time that has to elapse before you can do that again, or you can just do that
anytime? I think
we can
put it back out.
Right away?
Pretty much right away. Yeah. But it's probably a good idea to talk or maybe Barbara Sokoloff to see if there was anything in that RFP that just didn't make sense or they didn't feel what they could do or
mm-hmm. sure.
something.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other players that people around the table are aware of that they thought would submit for this?
I only know Barbara.
Yeah, there isn't a whole
I don't,
lot.
That's
I mean,
all I know.
There aren't many planning firms in general in Rhode Island.
Yeah.
So ones that want to do housing-specific work.
100 years ago when we had do the plans because of the changes to the Affordable Housing Act. We did a regional plan.
Mm-hmm.
Rick Tinker was involved in that. Karen Ellsworth came on board as part of the team they put together. And there was all those people, you know, everybody's getting old. The guys that I've worked with, you know, back 2004, 2005, you know, older like me. So I don't know who's coming up. I mean, Horsley Witten is, you know, fairly young.
Depends on the young people they have. I mean, Barbara was very active with us when we started this, but she had some good young people there.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
all those good young people, yes. She had to let go. She gets her money doing consulting on affordable housing development, and those resources dried up a lot, so she had to let one of her staff people go. But her son has joined her since. So I don't know, she just had too many tax credit deals to work on.
Was this a straight request for proposals? Did you consider doing a request for qualifications just to see if people would just throw their hat in the ring and already be able to get to a second round?
It was a request for proposals. There's a few elements in the proposal that I think we were actually asking the consultant to tell us. I think specifically around the outreach components and the survey components. But other than that, it was a fairly well-defined scope of work. So, I mean, it wasn't that we needed, there weren't a lot of, I think we wanted to be impressed by someone telling us how they were going to accomplish our well-defined scope of work, but I mean, it was also, we knew what we wanted, we weren't being too open-ended about it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you would agree with that, Chelsea.
Yeah.
So we could revise it and make it an RFQ, although I don't know, my sense of it is that we actually still want to see a company, even if what they're saying is, it, you know, this well-articulated scope of work we can accomplish. I think we want to see them put it in their words as well. And we did purposely state that we wanted the consultant to include in their proposal their specific strategy for outreach on a few points, because we didn't want to make any assumptions. We didn't want to tell them how many meetings or exactly how survey process should be done.
I forget, how many public things do they have to do to get the residents' thoughts on this? Because there were quite a few, wasn't there?
Yeah,
I wonder if how many people would come to that. It would be us again.
I think there were there was about one public forum sort of at the beginning with like need documentation, you know, that sort of thing. What are the needs in the community? There were several either AHC meetings or planning board meetings or joint meetings that we wanted them to come to, but those weren't necessary to get public input. It was more to like guide the process. And I think one summary public meeting at the end with the recommendations, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, we did definitely one big
meeting. I think there was four meetings with four interviews with local organization leaders, too.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I know they called that a meeting.
Right. Yeah. And that was like a state, one of the stakeholder meetings.
I mean, we definitely tasked the consultant with a lot of work. But in terms of the amount of public meetings that we really wanted the public to come to, there was kind of one big one up front, and then as we were developing the plan, there was kind of a big, here's our plan. And then I think it would also go through kind of a formal council review, so that would be, you know, part of a broader meeting, but there'd probably be a lot of people there and might have a few people that would be particularly interested in that. So it wasn't as though we were asking for tons and tons of, you know, get the people to the meeting, you know, a couple of those, but a lot of the work was just, you know, you have to, you know, be here, you have to work with the AHC, you have to work with staff and be participatory in that process.
I know that when we reviewed this first, we had asked the question that if the bids came in too high, if we could then take maybe like downsize it a bit, if you would. Was that stated to them at all, that it would be not that it's negotiable, but this was stated to them that this is the scope, not that there was any negotiation process in it?
In the cost section, we didn't necessarily say
negotiation's not the right word. I just can't think of it.
Yeah, we didn't necessarily come out and say maybe we did. I think we said we reserve the right to not fund any of these tasks, right?
Okay.
Which is not necessarily saying we're going to negotiate with you, but we have the opportunity to.
Okay.
In the cost proposal section, because we had them costed not only by task but also subtasks. And I want to say right under there was a statement about, you know, we, the town, reserves the right to not fund.
Which you have to, we have to do to cover our butts.
Yeah. And really, we were thinking this is sort of like the if it comes in at $60,000, we would take out whatever we needed to get it down.
I was just thinking of that on their end, like if they read that that way, so by saying, yeah, I really would like to bid on this, but you know, this is really unappealing to me.
That would be good to find out. What do they think?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the two companies that we've used a lot should respond to that, saying, you know, why didn't you want to do it?
Yeah.
Do you think this could be something of a shorter type, but still give us good results? I mean,
right.
they should be helping.
And there wasn't, I mean, I could see if we had said in the RFP somewhere how much money we had allocated,
right.
But we didn't, you know, so they didn't really, they couldn't base it on that because they didn't know what we had for them, you know. They couldn't say, well, that's a large scope for the amount of money you have because we just didn't know. Yeah, let's start with outreach to those two firms.
Yeah.
And see what maybe they're.
It's a good idea.
Yeah,
I agree.
Maybe we should do that first next time too, just to say, you know, you've worked with us so well, we want to have your opinion here.
Yeah.
It's always tough to give somebody a specific scope before we go out with it, but I think we could go out with it and then say, we want you to see this, and if you have any specific, if you're not going to bid, we'd like to know why. If they are going to bid, then we can't really say, let's have a detailed conversation about your bid and, you know, get into a discussion about it, because then it's sort of like giving one bidder more attention than another.
Yeah, so
I think right now, it's gone out to bid, it's closed, nobody responded. So we can get input on that RFP specifically that was already out and say, you know, what did you or you know, didn't you like about this specific one? Yeah, I agree. We can't, like, if we're going to change it and then send it back out, we can't necessarily preview that with firms. So we're giving them an unfair advantage. But we can tailor the new one based on the responses we get or to our discussions on the old one.
It'd be interesting to hear.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see if they come back with the same thing.
They were just too busy.
Yeah.
But also, there's a good chance they'll say, you know, we continue to be too busy. And it might just be because it's not the kind of work that they can easily do. It would require attention from maybe people that they wouldn't be ready to take their attention to that. You know, it's not like planners that do niche projects, and this isn't a niche of theirs.
Yeah. Maybe we should talk to Grow Smart Rhode Island and the Housing Network and see if they have any ideas about who we could outreach to.
I think nearby Connecticut, Massachusetts, if you could.
Yeah, we posted the RFP on Connecticut and Massachusetts APA websites for them, for those consultants, too.
Hmm.
And we'll be at SNEPA, so we'll keep our eyes out for housing-related firms over there, the Southern New England APA conference.
Yeah, I can't think of any other firms that are in Providence or in Rhode Island that other than Horsley Witten, that would do it. Don't have the shops enough planners. They're all more focused on engineering work now.
Because things are kind of booming, so.
Yeah, and I think Horsley Witten has taken some of the staff members from some of those. They've taken the last planner standing from a couple of competing firms. So they've helped themselves, but, you know, we also then need them to bid on our stuff.
Right. And I think for companies that worked for us before, it would have been nice to be told before the deadline.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a good business thing to do, a kind of business thing.
Okay, let's move on to the discussion of the comp plan update. Kayla sent us a nice memo with questions from the planning board.
So as you all probably have read the memo, it's fairly self-explanatory, and we just wanted to, I think this group, if you have any broad questions or comments, we could hear them. Otherwise, we could just go through some of the questions one by one and just get your feedback and response. I think that, you know, if you have any written responses, or if you had a more detailed, you know, something you prepared in advance, we'd certainly take it. Otherwise, just, you know, hearing your verbal comments would be very helpful.
Okay. Is everybody okay with going through them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Do you want to go, Doug? Do you want me to? Do you want to read them or?
I'm open. Yeah, I don't know if you want to help lead it. It's either way to me. I'm all ears. I'm going to be writing notes. So.
Okay. So the first on page two, the current housing goals. I guess start there.
Yep.
Has everybody had a chance to review them, or should I read the goal, the implementation action, and then the question, or I'm going to go right to the questions?
Let's go to the questions.
Okay, so for the housing goal number one, question number one, how could the town support upgrades to existing homes so they remain viable options for the continued provision of quality housing for low and moderate income residents and non-low and moderate income residents? Since CDBG money is no longer seems to be a dedicated funding source.
It's still there. It's just a little.
Do you think in the future it will?
It's just a little in disarray at the moment. It'll come back.
Okay.
You're talking about affordable units? I
upgrades,
there.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, regular housing.
Is it regular housing? Support upgrades to existing.
For low and moderate income housing and non, both. Is the way I'm reading the question. Am I not reading it incorrectly? Yes.
No, you're reading it. CDBG should continue to be available in the town. Probably has a two-tiered program. Up to 20,000 is a grant. Anything over 20 becomes a loan, negotiable terms. Rural housing has loans for people up to whatever their limits are these days. It's beyond low mod. Interest rate changes the higher the income gets. USDA still has housing preservation grants available in town. But other than that, well, SISLIP, you guys are doing the septic system loan program.
We are,
right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good for septic.
Do you think homeowners have a good awareness of these programs? I guess that would be my question. Is there a gap in people knowing that they have these options?
Yeah, the CDBG program requires public hearings, so that's advertised in the paper and on the website, I assume. So if you read the paper and go on the website, yeah, the information's there. A lot of people that
don't read newspapers.
Huh?
A lot of people don't read papers.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. And if they do, they don't necessarily look at the public hearing advertisements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't think we can assume that they're getting that information from newspapers.
A lot of people come through community action as a referral. The arts locally have referred people.
The only people who really know about it is they need help, other children need help.
Mm-hmm.
So that's tends to be the people who came to, you know. And then there's a lot of people in town when we did that first big one. We had probably 30 people there, 40. What we did at the school.
You mean an informational meeting? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, a public meeting that try to promote all this so that people would know about it. But if they don't have the need personally, or friends, or children.
What about you saying, like the Backpack Express, the schools, and the Senior Center to try to get
I feel like usually if people are getting services in another community service organization, that's where they'll normally get the knowledge base on where to pursue these different programs. Because oftentimes they just don't even have the education where to reach out in the town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You must see that the Genevieve Center even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just thinking, I mean, are we missing anybody in that sort of non-low moderate income who maybe would take advantage of things like this? You know, because there is another tier.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not maybe affordable housing the way we often talk about it, but still, that kind of housing preservation is important probably to the town, too.
Yeah.
And do they know what kind of programs are available?
Yeah. And so what first comes to my mind is going to be probably an elderly family, an elderly couple or something that can't afford to pay for home repairs, and they let the home go. So maybe senior centers or something like that would be a good place to reach out. But you're right, we should do
more. Population of elderly people who do not utilize programs such as at South County Community Action, they would be appalled to ever go ask for help. So I think it's important that we look at other ways, such as senior centers, maybe church bulletin outreach or something like that.
That's a good idea.
To get
and the Guild, the flyers at the Guild or something.
To get information out there.
The Elks Club has a will help to do repairs as well. I mean, I know it's not a town program, but...
Jeff, I'm just curious. What if the town committed to doing a lot of public outreach, or some public outreach, a newspaper ad, something on our website, just saying, hey, we just want to make you aware, you know, we have a program that can assist with helping, you know, housing eligibility based on income or seniors. Would you be afraid of the amount of applicants you would get? Are you almost like, would you feel like you'd be overwhelmed, or would you welcome that type of interest?
We're a world machine. Come in one end, go out the other.
Right on, Jeff.
The problem is the there's nothing much out there. So if we had something
in terms of funds
going on that was publicized, and they had to go to the zoning and the planning board, and that would be natural advertising of what's coming, and that could create a real interest in it. It's just that.
Does the town currently have a funded rehab program?
Through South County Community Action, isn't it?
No. Through the consortium, through Jeff Marchand.
That's true.
Have there been any recent experiences with folks that take advantage of the program? I know, Jeff, you're more on the front line, but it seems like there could be multiple barriers for people wanting to get involved. You know, some people might be involved with this, you know, the application process. Some people are intimidated, maybe just because of the nature of their house. It's an old house, it's lead, there's whatever. I've had a few experiences like this, trying to help people out with the application process. But I didn't know if anybody else had that same experience. I don't know if you had that experience with Johnny Cake. And if there was, you know, like you're suggesting, if there's a gap opportunity for the town to help ease that process. I mean, I know Jeff manages it, you know, on a daily basis.
Working at South County Community Action.
And sometimes it's different from
and
place to place.
And social service agencies.
Right.
Sometimes houses are too far gone, you know. Better bad news, you know.
Yeah, and Jeff is known to, at one of these meetings, or if I see him somewhere else, is that house on such and such a street, it needs a new roof. Do you happen to know them or something? And one time I said, yeah, I know who that is. And I talked with her. And
of course, in their red house by the side.
Yes. I saw her in Healy's, and I pulled her aside, and I said, you know, there's groups that can help you. She said, no, I don't think I need it. I mean, the roof was going. And I knew her a little bit from years ago, so she talked with me. But, yeah, it's you got to really, like, work hard to give help.
You do, yeah. So the process would be for someone to learn about the program and to realize within their own family that they need the help, and then they would go see Jeff. They would go directly to you
and
fill out forms.
Once they make the phone call to Jeff, the mystery of, if I don't know which projects I should do, or like the questions about it, I don't know how lead affects things. It's like, you know, at that point, a professional kind of takes over, and they don't have to pay for that initial assessment work. So Jeff has a process where he has an inspector that comes out and really does, like, helps them to understand what specific projects are eligible under the program and what specific things have to be done in order for the program to have a successful sign-off, for it to be compliant with the state regs. And then they give that homeowner all the information and say, here's what your scope of work would look like. So it really becomes something that they make the phone call, and then they provide all the paperwork for their eligibility. The work is largely done for them. But it could be that some people aren't calling because they just don't know. It could be some people aren't calling because they're just a little overwhelmed and they don't feel like they know enough about their house to want to make that phone call. You know, they know that maybe some projects need to be done, but they don't know whether it'd be eligible or not. And a lot of that can be fleshed out pretty quickly with a phone call.
Or they make assumptions.
Yes.
A lot of people just don't know that there's funding available.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's far-fetched if we felt that there was a need for the town to put out something in the paper, or to just, suggest to people the town has an active housing rehabilitation program. And it would probably just, provide, our facilitator of that program is the community consortium. And, you can begin any, exploration of an application with that group by, this phone number. That's kind of why I asked Jeff. It's like, would you be intimidated by that? Almost like an influx of phone. But, Jeff usually roll with most of the punches.
You just won't call him back.
I did not hear you say that.
That's fine. We even email the application if they have that capability, and it's no big deal. So.
I mean, I think, tell me if I'm wrong, you're going to know this, there was some smaller Victorian house 15 years ago that was in tough shape, and I think it was a mother and son. And I think the town, through maybe your program or their own, went in and fixed that house.
And a lot of houses have been fixed.
Huh?
A lot of houses have been fixed over time.
Yes.
CDBG money.
Yeah.
A lot of them. Not only South Kingstown, but the whole state.
Yeah, I think this one was identified because you could see that there were problems there. Mm. If I remember the story, it was before we started this. And then I heard it in the early years of this, that what the town did, I don't know if it's through something else, but it was just a nice story that they're, they're kind of looking, he's always looking for somebody who needs help.
Oh, yeah. I think in the last 5 years since I've been in the town, I'm in the ballpark that we've done somewhere between 20 to 25 rehab jobs. So, I mean, that's the breadth of work that we do.
Yes.
And some of them were smaller scale because the program initially had a $10,000 cap on the grant with no ability to go above. And the more recent ones, now that we're working with the consortium, are a larger scale. I think Jeff has a background that he can do some of the bigger projects. And so we're doing some, more sizable projects now. But there's a lot of work that program has done. That's not to say that, so that averages out, maybe you get 4 to 5 people a year. There's probably a greater need in the community than just those 4 or 5 people.
Possible to do a story, a feature story?
That's what I was thinking. That would be something that a reporter could put
a feel-good story about?
Without
or is it too
or just the
personal?
Those people
that
participate in that, I'm sure it has happened in the past. But they don't need to play for see.
Jeff, do you see other towns in the consortium taking any more of an outreach role, or is everyone basically kind of working under the assumption that you'll find the services because you're linked with other service providers, or you if you care enough, you'll research it and you'll find it?
Yeah, the only effort the towns have made really is meeting the statutory requirements of applying for the money,
yep,
public notices,
yep,
and then sticking something on our website.
Just thinking, even just stuffer in the tax bills, or like something that everyone gets.
Something like that would be great.
Flyer of some kind.
That's a good idea.
That says, this program is available. There are qualifications, but if you think you might need it, call
it. Something at the supermarket
where
everybody goes and buys food.
Right. Yeah, I mean, every home in South Kingstown gets a tax bill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so actually that's an excellent
idea.
That's
a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's good.
I think you reach more ambassadors that way too, because it may be someone's not connected with a formal service provider, but they may have a friend or family member that sees the house and knows some things need to get done, and at least they also know that they could help facilitate that, because that could be a barrier too, that someone just...
I have one. He's one of my neighbors, and his house is completely falling apart around him, and he's very reluctant to take any help at all.
I got a guy, South Kingstown. I sent him an application. He's on the list. It had to be, I sent Doug an update on where we're at with applications in various stages because of the moratorium and CDBG is allegedly going to lift Monday. There's been a moratorium on CDBG program at all.
That's right.
August 1 expires October 1, so we'll see what happens. But the guy called up, talker. Love those.
I wanted
to understand the program, so I told him all about it. And then, like, once a month, he calls me back. Well, I haven't sent the application in, but, he's talking all over again. I want to do this, He hasn't ever sent the application yet.
I think I know the guy. Yeah, it's on your list.
I'll have to call you next time.
Well, I'll talk to him about a few other programs, but yeah, he calls and he likes to talk.
Yeah. He calls me Mr. Marchant, so I, you know, that's great.
So it sounds like you think maybe the majority of the way the town can support continued use of homes for you know, LMI households or just general keep up affordability would be through awareness.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're going to mail something, you might want to get a hold of what Rhode Island Housing is doing these days with their home repair program
okay.
and include it.
Okay.
Because there are some people who are not income eligible for CDBG, but they are for Rhode Island Housing. Well, those are always loans, but yeah, it's something.
Okay. I think talking at the senior center could really be good. I mean, to me, you're going to have to do it once, 4 weeks later, do it again, because people are not have been there, and other people are going to say you should have been there. And maybe it takes 3 over 6 months to really try to get them all to know.
I like it in the tax bill, too, because I was thinking the same. You might have some advocates in there who know someone who might not live to pick up the phone themselves, but
they
might,
know
yeah.
their mom needs help.
Right.
Really good point, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Even a special mailing, you know, get the tax the labels, address labels by the tax people. You give some of the housing trust fund money before it.
I was
going
to say, is there any way that you could use it? Like the administrative money for CDBG to do outreach?
Or no? You could probably finesse something if you had any.
If you can get some.
Yeah.
All right. So, question. I think that answers this for question one, and then question two. I think we've kind of been speaking about it as well.
Yeah.
Which is basically it's kind of all leading back to, you know, the town's rehab program.
I think we kind of covered
yeah, I think
those.
We did too.
I think we covered two, 2A. I mean, you guys, I think within your work plan, you could have a role. I think if we sent something out, really the goal is to get the notice out, not necessarily to have an informational meeting, but if we found that we sent out a notice and we were getting an inundation of questions about it, I think we would probably, at that point, think that a public meeting would be a good choice. I think if we just held a public meeting and tried to provide notice for it without, you know, I think it might most people might be in the same program. I mean, like I don't know how it applies to me. You kind of have to get them interested in feeling that it applies to them, and then maybe we can direct it to a meeting.
Yeah.
And that's my thought is that if we had a meeting, then you guys could take a role with that and mm-hmm. incorporate it into sort of your own outreach. But without a meeting, it kind of becomes more of a staff job. I don't know if you would agree.
Yeah, mm-hmm. be like planting a seed.
Yeah.
And then if the seed grows into something that's becoming unwieldy, that we can't, you know, everyone's got tons and tons of questions, and maybe we need a meeting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, notification. Does the senior center? Does the executive director know at the senior center about the programs for the rehab programs?
That's, oh yeah.
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 Okay.
Well, they actually use the CDBG program as well to you know sometimes fund their own. Facility projects, which they're eligible for.
Okay.
But I mean, it's a good point. I don't. I think they know, but do they really know?
Bless you.
They have an information and referral person who's very solid over there. I suspect she's well versed. I don't know about the other staff.
But I mean, and most of the time, all you have to do is tell someone like, "Yeah, as a senior, you're considered eligible. You just have to make a phone call." I mean, that's all that they really need to know.
Yeah.
Worth doing like a half-hour informational session at the senior center. You know, they have those programs where they bring in speakers just to do one of those, but on the program so that everyone is aware.
Yeah. Jeff, have you ever done?
Oftentimes they have cake over there.
Oh, okay.
You're
going to
be
right
the speaker. You have your speaker.
I get a lot of referrals from North Kingstown Senior Center, so I don't know what makes one center more. South Kingstown certainly knows about the program. They got money for it themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like an informational meeting mm-hmm. there, a short meeting. It would be good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right.
And then question three.
I think you kind of answered three.
All right.
It's regular old, homeowners that don't have a lot of money. It's not official affordable housing. Right.
I guess that means we don't have anything. There must be resources available, and this turns into one of those projects where it's the town would try to make information available. But there must be like an educational guide for homeowner restoration projects. So obviously, at that point, it becomes education, not necessarily funding.
Well, your own HDC actually put the word out too. In fact, it was Narragansett. An article, I don't know how accurate the Narragansett Times reporters are, but they were complaining about guys who couldn't afford to comply with the historical requirements that Narragansett was putting on their business. Mm-hmm. Called city meeting. They have to fix the house, so they've got some, I don't know if it's mandatory zoning.
They have to go through the HDC.
In the Kingston district.
No, I mean, I'm talking Narragansett.
Oh.
This was a story. I couldn't believe I was reading. It was Mike DeLucas.
Has any historic zoning districts?
They do.
They do?
Yeah. It's just, I really don't understand how it works, and you try to get an answer out of DeLucas.
I love it.
But it seemed clear to me, and DeLucas used to run the CDBG program for the town of Narragansett. Call the CDBG program and see if they can help with these requirements like that.
Yeah, I think for some of those, like in the Kingston Historic District, it's not necessarily, they're asking for improvements that might cost more than a normal improvement. Mm-hmm. So the homeowner might not be an LMI homeowner.
Oh, no, certainly
they're
not.
Just saying, I don't want to do those improvements because they cost more than the other otherwise would. But certainly the HTC could spread the word if that was a problem.
Yeah.
For Kingston.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, I think about question three, and I think, what's the point of contact that the town may have with someone that's doing the home project, and it would be the building official, and maybe you get a resident that's coming up holding a building permit and saying, I'm not sure the best way to do this. Maybe they may have literature, which I think that they do, almost like a how-to. But I don't know if, that helps them, but that's more like projects they knew they were going to take, not necessarily upgrades to homes.
Mm. These are developments.
Yeah. So it's not like there's a funding pot that we can really help with major upgrades to homes beyond what maybe someone was already considering.
And that's maybe, like Jeff said, looking to that Rhode Island Housing Home Repair Program, the loan program.
So those first three questions are really talking about trying to upgrade or current houses and that kind of thing. And I'm sitting here thinking we've had a lot of good senior buildings built in South Kingstown over the last 30 years. And I know somebody who's lived in a house for 30 years doesn't want to think they're going to go to a one-bedroom apartment. The good part is they only have to pay 30% of their income for the apartment. So there's been a lot of choices for seniors in South Kingstown. That's been really nice. So kind of, what we've been talking about here mostly is how do we get something built for the single moms, the single dads, the, apartments and that kind of stuff.
People with disabilities.
Right. And we've sat here at different things saying they want to build two-bedroom things, and we go, how about a third? Mm-hmm. They don't have to be big rooms, but if there's two kids, they get to get their own room, like their friends in school have, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, when the money started to go at the beginning of the recession, when we first started, there were some things happening. And the only thing that's really been happening census having to do with subdivisions where they get the extra lots. And there wasn't a lot of that for a lot of years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As soon as we passed the ordinance, the crash happened.
And I think, these questions to me, are really about how you preserve what you have.
Yeah.
Rather than relying only on subdivisions and land development projects.
Yeah.
South Kingston has, you know, a large housing stock right now. A lot of it is providing, you know, little A affordable housing to people, and not letting that, you know, become in such a state where it can no longer be used.
Right.
Right. Before it gets to that point.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess in general as well, I want the comprehensive plan to look at, you know, we are providing most of our LMI housing through inclusionary zoning, which we put this in our RFP, is, you know, that happens where the subdivision happens. It happens where the land development project happens, not in Wakefield and Peacedale, where it's the most supportive environment.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I like some input generally for how we think we could address that, either with inclusionary zoning or in some other way, to say, well, we, as an example, we're going to give you a 25% bonus if you do off-site LMI, right, as opposed to the 20% bonus you'll get if you do on-site on Route 2 in Illinois. You know, so maybe there's some incentives that can happen with, you know, existing housing stock through the subdivision process.
Yeah, that's fresh. Mm-hmm. And
there's a way that we can say, well, you know, you were supposed to get 10 lots. If you build your LMI on that property, you'll get 12. But if you, you know, provide them off-site, you can still have your 12 lots, but now you have to do, like, 3 LMI off-site. You know, something that makes more sense.
Yeah, we started that a few years ago for the first time.
Yeah. And not a lot of people have chosen to do the off-site, I think, as far as I can tell, but there must be some way to incentivize that better.
Well, I think we've had a couple of people come say.
And like
Stone Soup Farm did.
Jay Gilbert did.
Yeah, he did. Well, his first two.
I don't know.
I feel like you have to have enough properties around town to be able to, you know, have some good options, and then the property that's a good candidate.
Yeah.
Which Jay did.
Yeah. I think the other thing, we've had a lot of people come and ask about cottage housing developments.
Yeah.
I have actually a meeting next week with someone who wants to do one off Broad Rock Road, and we have that flexible design residential project model that we tell everyone they can use in just the smaller lots. But I think that right now, it seems anyway, it only makes sense if it's a large parcel, not here in Tentua. Again, sort of not a great place. So to figure out a way where we can encourage that sort of smaller scale housing, even if it's brand new, on infill parcels in Tentua.
So that's a developer, or is it the people who own the land already, or is it a...
Typically, you know, someone would buy the parcel and develop it that way. But I think the land costs and the zoning, and, you know, that you, for an FDRP, you have to set aside, depending on your zoning district, between 40 and 80% of your lot has open space, and then you can build on the rest. So if it's already a small lot, you're not going to get much out of it. So to allow some kind of cottage-style development without having to put aside that open space, if it's in the right place, or if it's in Wakefield, if it's in Peacedale.
Right.
That makes sense.
What's an FDRP?
Sorry, it's a flexible design residential project.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It's basically, if you
learn that one,
conservation subdivision, it's the same idea, where you are required to set aside a certain percentage of your lot as open space, but then you can use the rest for sort of a higher density development on smaller lots. So if you are in a zoning district that requires that you have 80,000 square feet, you can go per lot, you can go all the way down to 10,000 per lot in an FDRP to sort of preserve the land, and gives you the density.
Was what Habitat did on Old North Road in Kingston? Was that there? Was there land at the end of the road, or?
I don't know. That one specifically.
Maybe that was an R10 thing. But they did put 4 nice cottage houses there.
Not the one on Broad Rock. Not Broad Rock Acres.
No. The one in Kingston.
Yeah, I don't know
that one. The Murphy School site, wasn't it?
But yes, it was on the old Kingston school.
Mm. Most of what we see for subdivisions come in as that project type, because they want to sort of reduce their infrastructure costs and put the houses closer together and preserve the open space.
And that's the thing now, you know, those small little houses and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. So maybe some kind of zoning amendment that would allow that style of development to happen without having to set aside open space mm-hmm. in the places where that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good idea.
It's the neighbor issue that when they want to do that. That's the killer.
Yes.
In my backyard.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be anywhere.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, for anything.
Right.
True. Shall we move on to goal three?
Mm-hmm.
How could the town best utilize the affordable housing fund? What is the overall purpose of the fund? What should it support to be most effective? I think when we first talked about the affordable housing, we're talking about the Affordable Housing Trust Fund here?
Yes.
Okay. We, of course, wanted a steady revenue stream, and now that we are getting some funding. I know that a couple conversations came up, and we talked about it being able to support affordable housing without being in an extremely specific way so that we wouldn't scare people off. So it could be a little bit of soft costs, or it could be, and I could please chime in if I'm not remembering correctly, anything to do with the possible creation of affordable housing, whether it be application fees up to, I mean, $10,000 wouldn't really do much for soft costs, but...
Yeah, help to $2,000 for survey stuff, or to try to get the contractors, the developers, to consider South Kingstown, you know. Typically, they find something on their own, land-wise, and then they try to make it work. But, I mean, that was the exciting thing about getting that money, that we might be able to fast-start something with a little bit of help, you know.
Right. I get concerned about being too specific now that we do have some money with it, because I just feel like it's so difficult to get anyone to develop affordable housing
mm-hmm.
in the town that we want them to be able to have any. We want them to feel as if they have access to a specific fund or a subsidy, if you will.
Well, I think with the three projects that have accessed those funds, they needed
mm-hmm.
it for what they did.
Right.
Really at-risk feasibility, due diligence stuff. And you got a project. And one is the guy doing a selfie. We learned.
No.
Right. Yeah. More often than not, yes.
And then, you know, you need to do the phase one environmental to protect yourself. And you're really architectural to see and get an idea of the development call. I think it's doing what it's supposed to do. I don't see any reason. I want some guy to come in and have a gap with hard costs, maybe fine. But we'll keep it flexible.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yep, I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we were thinking at the end of the affordable housing study, whenever it actually gets done, some of that money could be used to implement whatever the recommendations were, so that the money wouldn't necessarily be, you know, you put in money to get one unit or put in money to get two units, but you use the money to craft some kind of either policy framework or incentive program or something that would have a sort of wider reach than just one for one, you know. But we need that RFP because we don't know what those things are. So in addition to sort of soft costs, things to sort of implement, get things off the ground, maybe some kind of programmatic change
mm-hmm.
to increase the supply in general.
Yeah, we talked about in certain situations, you know, maybe reducing fees, development fees and impact fees,
yep.
You know, that if that was something that actually got, you know, enough, got a developer over the hump to offer something more.
Aren't those waived for affordable units anyway?
The impact fees are.
The impact
fees
are, okay.
Potentially, yep. You know, waiving it for a development as a whole in order to provide us with some, an additional unit.
Okay.
But I mean, most of the developers right now are so, to be honest, kind of turned off and see the you know, gaining a new affordable unit to them is sometimes, like, they're not sure how they can even get financing for it. So they see it as a burden more than an asset.
Yeah.
So I think they look at it as a money equation. It's like, oh, great, you're giving me $10,000 in, you know, reduced impact fees, but that new unit that I'm taking on in order to, you know, take that $10,000, it's not worth $10,000 for me to take on that unit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and the developer doesn't pay the impact.
Yeah.
Really, usually. It's because you don't pay them until CO.
So it's like
a occupancy. So it's whoever buys the lot, builds the house, they pay the impact fee.
Yeah. You know, so that's the trick, is using the money to incentivize it in some creative way that is enticing to a developer, but it's hard to make it a money for money swap, because then we just kind of turn it into a watered down version of we're trying to pay for an affordable housing unit, and we just don't have enough money to actually do that.
Well, and really, this problem is a reflection of the problem that we're basing our LMI on inclusionary zoning. Inclusionary zoning is not, one, going to get us the numbers that we need, and two, it's just not an effective tool to get LMI housing. So if we can get away from inclusionary zoning to some other something, whatever it is, I think that would be preferable for the town in general. So I would not say, if you have six or more lots, you have to provide one unit, you know, 20%. Because a lot of them come in at four lots, and they put it at four lots or five lots specifically so they don't have to do the LMI. So I think in general, my hope for that study is that it'll give us something else besides inclusionary. You know, do inclusionary, that's fine, but we need something more, something else. Yeah.
What about incentivizing people for the accessory apartments and things like that? Mm. Somehow making that attractive to people.
Yeah, I mean,
homeowners.
I think from what I've heard sort of generally, South Kingstown is a rare place that we basically by right allow accessory apartments throughout town. Most places don't do that.
Yeah. It's a great thing,
yeah.
I think.
And the accessory apartments, unless they're deed restricted, don't count as LMI, but they would generally be, you know, literally affordable, you'd think, for, you know, whoever's in them.
True.
Is that
but
if, apartment? Is that
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or
it could be
detached. It can be detached.
I was looking at detached apartments as something more than welcome.
In South Kingstown, you can have an accessory apartment up to 750 square feet in one bedroom on basically any residential lot in town.
So if we were to incentivize somehow to do that and have a deed restriction or something, even short term.
Yeah, I think what Chelsea's saying is that it would be easier if we were a community that had a more difficult regulatory path to get it, because the incentive would be, we'll allow it, but it's allowed.
Why,
so it's
would,
like,
I, why would I want your
pay
money?
Somebody to build a building, you know, like it's.
And I think you all have talked about with Jay Gilbert before that, you know, deed restricting accessory apartments presents its own
that's true.
Set of problems.
Yeah,
so.
That's true.
Yeah. So yeah,
and
something we thought about.
And it's I think you can argue that any affordable unit is helpful, but we know that. Because accessory units can be a maximum of one bedroom, they're not particularly helpful for the housing families.
Yeah, it's not on target.
Yeah, it's not the target.
True.
It's not,
but
not
I don't agree with that. Because I work in Providence, and our waiting lists are all for one bedroom. And a whole housing study that Rhode Island Housing did said, we need one bedrooms. We need lots of one bedrooms. It's the older couples that need places, and it's the millennials. Those are the people who need the housing in the next 10 to 20 years. That's what we should be focusing on. I don't think it is the three bedrooms and the families.
Is that in general or for LMI households?
Yes, LMI, yep.
Statewide.
Well, the housing report, the fact book that came out, there's a new one coming out soon, but that one really spoke about, you know, what's going to happen in the next 20 years and what we really need to be focusing on. And it was multifamily and it was small units.
Mm-hmm.
And in Providence, it is different, but it's we get a lot of attention. People want one bedroom. Mm-hmm. Well, that's all they qualify for because they're small. It's just a mom and a child. That's a two-bedroom, or it's a couple, or it's a single person.
I think the other thing, I had someone call recently about a property in Kingston, actually right next to the train station. It's currently a two-family, but it's like, I think an acre and a half in size. And she was asking, well, can I put a three-family there? Could I do four units? And the answer is no. Zoning doesn't let it happen. So there might be some zoning amendments in the places where it makes sense, where there's already maybe three family, four family units to allow that development to happen on a small lot size. To sort of satisfy that need for that type of development. So at Kingstown right now, you can do single family everywhere, duplex in only some zones, and if you do a duplex, your lot size increases by quite a bit. And then you can only do multifamily housing in like the multi-family housing zone, or if
you
do an FDRP and preserve
all that
land,
so
there's not much of that.
Does the town still own that house behind, not like across the street from the train station? Because that's multi-family, right? Across from the Baptist Church, and I can't think of the name of the road. It's not Waits Corner Road. It's not
the Allen House.
No,
the White House. It's a White House.
The old poor farm. What's the one you're talking about?
I don't know. If you took a right at the train station, you went down the Watson House.
We do own it.
Because that was, yeah. We've been through that a couple of times to take a look at that.
Yeah, I think they're still trying to figure out what to do about it. Because they put it up for sale recently and they got one bid. I think they didn't open the bid because they knew it was going to be a low ball. So, yeah, they're still trying to figure it out. I think, you know, especially Houston and Wakefield can support higher density multifamily housing that doesn't look like an apartment building. I think that's probably the concern, but has the infrastructure to support it better than anywhere else.
But if the town said to somebody who had two apartments or three and they wanted to add one or more,
can't do it.
No, but if it was changed, would it have to be an affordable unit? Or you just...
That's a good question.
Which is difficult for the owners to kind of grasp.
Yeah. I mean, you could. I was thinking that it would just be multifamily, that you'd allow it, and not necessarily make an LMI unit or deed restricted unit, because multifamily units in general are more affordable than single.
Right.
I think also, I think it's really good for us to think about multiple strategies, you know, and doing lots of different things. You know, because I think even when you get up into, you know, affordable housing again, that maybe isn't the LMI housing, there's still, it seems to me, a big need in this town for folks who are in those other income levels, and that there seems like there's a lot of pressure on the market right now, that there might be a lot of demand for smaller units, but there might also, you know, there might be lots of different ways to make housing more accessible to a more diverse population, I guess.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I guess my other question is, what are the zoning barriers and what can we really do about zoning barriers if that's potentially one of the things we're talking about to make changes?
The first thing you would do is, we'd have to identify what those barriers are.
Right.
So I think we've talked about a few of them, right? If you, as a committee, wanted to address that, you would basically make a recommendation to the planning board, who would then take it up for study and determine how they wanted to or didn't want to address it in the zoning ordinance with your input. And then the planning board would present it to the town council, and the town council changes the zoning. So it's not a necessarily overtaxing process. We do a lot of zoning amendments. I think we did 5 last year. But to be really specific about what it is you want to accomplish. And then the planning board sort of works out all the details and gets it done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think there are some barriers to developing affordable, either LMI or literally affordable housing in South Kingstown that could be addressed pretty readily.
This is a good discussion because I think we're opening it up, trying to, just like you said, it's come up with some.
And it might be at the end of the day that, if you're going to allow multifamily, you could go up to, in these areas that make sense, we'll do 3 units by right. If you want a 4th, maybe then it's LMI. There's different ways you can address it to get what you want. It's really to figure out what the outcome is that you're trying to achieve and then craft the ordinance to get you that outcome.
Yeah.
And I think in a lot of ways, what makes it cheaper is to put more units into a coordinated, smaller location. Just naturally will create a cheaper unit. And then it's where in town do we identify places where there's room to grow and we want that type of density.
Mm-hmm.
So density can be a 4-letter word in some communities. But I think the town has some ideas on where that could occur. We've been looking at Old Tower Hill Road. It's still a little ways away. It's not like we're at the step where we're ready to say, let's introduce affordable housing into these areas. We're in places where we're still navigating that first 4-letter word, which is density, and not moving on to the second 4-letter word, which is affordability.
Like we talked about, is there public water, sewers, is there
transportation,
all of the
access to goods and services.
Right.
There's all those studies that say if you have access to transportation and don't need a car, then you save $7,000 a year in transportation costs. So there's things to be done. There's certainly infill potential in Wakefield and Peacedale. Look at the capital this time.
Yeah, and that's, and we looked at the, I think the cottage housing is another strategy, very specific housing strategy that has been discussed as well for that.
Okay, moving on to question two. Goal three, question two. Do you want me to read them in blood, or is everybody, how you guys are feeling about that? In August, the Affordable Housing Collaborative discussed the potential resources available to assist the development of LMI housing on donated land. Does the AHC see the action listed above as an appropriate strategy given their recent discussion of this topic? And are there additional strategies that the AHC would recommend the planning board consider including?
Yeah, we've talked about that.
I think maybe I can put a little frame on this for you. When a developer subdivides a property, say they're just, they have 3 acres and they want to create three lots, that developer has no requirement by the town to then put houses on those lots. All they're doing is a subdivision, right? So if you take that up to like a 10-lot subdivision, sort of the same legal framework. All they're doing is dividing the lots. We require them to put a deed restriction on 2 of them. But they, at the end of the day, if they didn't want to build any of those lots, houses on them, they don't have to. If they want to just sell them off and let someone else build them, they can do that too. So there's a little bit of a struggle with the subdivision or land development, maybe land development project separate, but with the subdivision process, that you can't necessarily require a developer to build a house on a lot that they've subdivided. Because it's the subdivision process is to create lots, not to build houses.
Guarantee houses.
You know what I mean? So literally they could take all 10 of their lots and just sell them all. And then there would be a deed restriction on the ones that they sell, but the planning board can't require them to build all 10 of those houses. Mm-hmm. Build even the deed restriction.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit of a legal question.
That's happening now in West Kingston, right off Route 2.
It's happening at, the South County Trail subdivision. So there's ways that we could, craft an approval to say something like, you can't sell half of your lots until you build an LMI unit. But again, I don't know how feasible that is, right? Because they're not required to build the unit. All they've done is subdivide it. And even the zoning ordinance says, inclusionary zoning is deed restriction. It's not building. It's not actually putting that house on that lot. So I think, the question about whether they can, they deed restrict a lot and then donate it to someone, I think it's a viable option if there's organizations that want to take that lot and actually build something on it. Other than that, I'm having a hard time really wrapping my head around how you require an LMI unit to be built.
I don't know if bonding could be used in a subdivision process without a lot of heavy infrastructure.
Pretty much all major subdivisions that would have inclusionary zoning have some kind of bond on them. But again, it's for the infrastructure that's required to support the lots, not the houses.
And once the infrastructure is built, you can't hold the bond.
Correct.
But I'm wondering if we could use some type of bonding strategy to say your bond can't be released until you've met the conditions of building the affordable units.
Again, a subdivision isn't for building, it's just for creating lots. So, if I'm a homeowner, if I just own, I'm a random resident of South Kingstown, and I own a 10-acre parcel, I, as that resident, can go and subdivide that parcel. The planning board is not going to require that resident to then go build an LMI house. Wouldn't happen, because they're not a developer, they're not a builder. So you can't say that you would do the same thing, you wouldn't do the same thing for an actual developer, right? You can't treat them differently just based on who owns the property. Mm-hmm.
Right, so if she sold each one off individually and someone developed that land.
Two would have to be deed restricted because it's inclusionary.
Right.
But the property owner wouldn't be responsible for building all those houses.
Right.
So it's sort of the same, right? So if it's a developer, you have to treat them the same way as you would any property.
What's the difference between the theory and the practice, though? I mean, how often is this a situation where there's like a person just subdividing and selling off their lots versus a builder or developer?
Even like, so Jay Gilbert subdivided
and then sold those lots to builders to build the houses. Now he's trying to build his lots because probably he doesn't realize that he's not necessarily required to build the house, right? It could be that. Or he could just think he, you know, wants to do the right thing and build the units. But yeah, a lot of them do that. Now, like an Alex Petrucci will subdivide and then build because that's his business, that's what he does.
So how did we handle that with Stone Soup Farm? Because that was the case. He didn't build all those lots, Jay. He subdivided them.
He subdivided and sold a whole bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
He has not questioned whether or not he needs to build those units, and we have not discussed it for that.
But he would be required to, under his approval, to deed restrict a certain number of those lots.
So and he has.
Right.
Essentially, some builders don't see it as, you know, they know they could build, it's a buildable lot, they just don't see it as being a viable financial investment on its own.
And so they'd just leave the lots empty.
They would leave the lots empty because that's a more net positive financial venture from their perspective. Jay may look at it and say, you know what, I can get some money out of this.
I can make a little bit of money on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so they could just have different models of building and different, you know, economy scale of how they deal with it. And some developers, it's like not worth the time or effort to invest into the building of it.
And you can't, are deed restricted lots just not marketable on their own to anyone?
You'd have to, you'd have to sell it to like a Habitat for Humanity or someone who...
They're not very marketable.
Well, so then when we ask the question, who would accept a donated lot? So it's like basically the market being that it's
a
free.
A CDC of some kind, right?
We're not sure if someone would even want to take that on as a donated.
A CDC would.
Right, a CDC on the
floor. CDC would love it. For the developer who was going to just leave it vacant, they are getting some kind of tax rebate on the donation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's sort of a win-win, I think, for both sides.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. If it's bonus lots, you have to defend the value of land to claim a donation to a nonprofit. If you were given the land by zoning, I don't think you have.
No.
I don't think so.
Okay.
That came up back in the old days, and I think it was.
A net zero?
It was a zero.
Yeah, they got the value out of the by right development, and the bonus was required of them by the town, and they took it. Now, Habitat recently bought two bonus lots in extra. I couldn't believe it. They paid $63,000.
Yeah.
I said, why? Why'd you do that? Those were bonus lots to the landowner.
Right.
They said it made sense at the time.
When a developer decides to make a subdivision, he's only doing it because he thinks it's going to work.
Right.
And it has to be, what's the market like? And because they don't typically leave it empty. But so, something's going to happen there. On the market rate stuff, but
I mean, basically, it's South Kingstown. If I, at my under zoning, could get 10 lots, inclusionary zoning says I can get 12, but two have to be deed restricted. So I'm still getting 10 market rate lots, and I just now have to also have two deed restricted lots. So you're not getting a market rate bonus of any kind. You're just getting the LMI unit bonus, two lots.
So it's who do you entice to build on those? Is that the question?
I think so. I think a lot of the development that's happened in the past, they don't question whether they have to build the house. Because it's a developer and they're just building the house, they don't know that it's a question to ask, maybe, people like Alex Petrucci know that it's a question to ask, or they know that they are not legally bound in any way to build those two lots. So they don't. So, yeah. So. Right. So then I guess what role can the planning department play, potentially, in connecting those lots with people who want them?
Do you think if there was more of an awareness of that, there would be a potential for people to take, to maybe if they're thinking about the 4 subdivision versus the 6, they might be more open to having those lots if there was some kind of system to make them.
Actually build them.
Because
then it turns it into
information to like get out in
some context, right?
But also if you're a developer, you're not, and if you're trying to build a nice development like Stone Soup, you don't really want Habitat or Washington County CDC to come in and build a house for a low-income family, because you're kind of, you know, you want your neighborhood to be.
You think you have a perception that that's going to
be yours first and get out.
Do
But it's not. You're not going to be all that enticed to do that.
The Habitat houses have, they have architects. This.
Oh, I don't. You know, I don't believe that.
Be really
no. But your perception.
Their perception.
Right.
Right. We build really nice houses at the CDC. They're very nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, it's a good idea. It's a damn good idea.
If we were to force them to build the two affordables, they might not buy the subdivision. They might not just do it. For the people like Alex who say, I can't move them.
My question, and really would need the legal opinion, is whether we as the town have the authority to force people to build a house.
Right.
Which I don't think we do, generally.
No. But there would be there'd be a pushback if we could legally do it, where people would say, I'm not going to buy this.
We could potentially, thinking about this as we talk, we could maybe put a condition on the approval that they have to identify who is going to build on that lot before they get their approval, right? So say, I'm going to build it or I'm going to donate it to someone and have some kind of agreement for the lots in question to be built before they get their approval or before they sell so many lots. Or
that seems like that would be really tough to do, particularly with the short time frame that they have to work.
Yeah. But if it were written into the regulations, they would know that they have to do it, so it wouldn't necessarily be.
So it'd be like a completeness of the application?
Potentially.
Part of the checklist?
Part of the checklist. I mean, they have to get their DEM permits, right, as part of the checklist. They have to get all sorts of things. You could put as part of that checklist an agreement with a CDC or someone who's going to then build that house.
What if that falls through?
That's the question. And if you didn't do it based on the approval, you could maybe do it on the sale of so many lots or building of so many lots. I don't know.
Do you think the town could withhold the CO of the final market rate unit until we knew the affordable units also received their CO?
No, because it likely would be owned by different people.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't, I mean, really, you have no way to know that the developer is going to own that unit that the CO is being called on.
Yeah.
Because so they could just sell the lot.
It would be a really sneaky developer would just basically potentially, if that rule existed, would leave that problem with the homeowner.
Well, I think even, you know, like Alex's development, he subdivides them, he sells the lot, and then his construction company builds it. He doesn't own that lot when he's building the house on it. He sells it to somebody, and then he builds the house. You know what I mean? So it's not, you can't put the burden of the developer on the homeowner.
For the CEO.
The CO is on the owner of the house.
Yeah.
It's complicated.
It is. I mean, it's the CO is where we have some at least trigger point, but by that point, it could be too late.
And again, this is why we need to get away from inclusionary zoning. This is an inclusionary zoning problem. It's not, you know, my problem. It's the way we provide it.
Well, the inclusionary zoning we've talked about many times is kind of like backpedaling, because for the two affordable you're getting 8 more market rates.
You're not
so 10%
your percentage.
So you're talking about, I mean, that the change really needs to be more of a larger overhaul as opposed to a work
change.
With what's there.
So maybe there's something we can do. I think, need to brainstorm a little bit more. Talk to the legal counsel.
Okay, we're moving on to the URI. On for question one. Has this implementation action been undertaken? Does the Affordable Housing Collaborative have any examples of how this action is undertaken or any recommended adjustments to this implementation action? And the implementation action is, if the South Kingstown Affordable Housing Collaborative will provide resource, information, and advocacy for university-initiated or sponsored projects that provide on-campus faculty, staff, or alumni staff housing to ensure such projects include an affordable housing component consistent with Rhode Island general law. Though I was thinking of the Schertner gentleman who came to us long ago that owned the property at URI, the apartment, Zach, yes. And I couldn't remember, because I was reading this before I came, so I'm going to admit I didn't read it any time earlier. I can't remember what happened with that. There is not an affordable component. I know that. I think he chose to keep his rentals. I think he was looking to maybe, I don't remember what he was, maybe some sort of substantial rehab that would require him to then include an affordable unit in it. I don't remember what happened, but I think he just kept him as college rentals. They're kind of behind the information center, if you will. I don't know the campus that well, but behind the union. There's some apartments. Have we reached out to URI? As a collaborative, no.
It's a unique
sentence. I work with them being a housing residential life group. So they've got Vice President Kathy Collins is still relatively a little over a year there. So she's a pretty dynamic person. She'd be the one to talk to. So as you know, we're building that 500-bed upperclassman apartment complex. Affordability plays into it, but from a different perspective. So I'm not going to speak for the university, but there's some great people to talk to, and Kathy Collins would be the point of contact. I can speak with her. They do have other plans in the works as far as additional housing within their existing assets. So it's great.
I know just anecdotally too that some of the newer faculty coming in who are, you know, haven't been there a long time and have, you know, sort of lower but still professional incomes are, you know, they find it a challenge sometimes to find housing in South Kingstown for their young families. And you know, just like I said, anecdotally, I know there's families that are choosing neighboring towns because they're more affordable and they can't be in the town where they work.
So no, those are things we can look at. Village, it's, you know, it's anecdotal, but it's loaded with bicycles. I'm working on the bike paths for a project, and you know, I got to visit that place to kind of understand how they would use it. And the cars that are there, it's probably they have multiple lives, so they keep on getting recycled. You know what I mean? So it speaks to the earlier point of depending on where you're living, you know, if you don't rely on transportation, that basically offsets your. Yeah, it's not, it's complementation. The university's kind of struggling at this. Continuously keep building. I'm intentionally trying not to say anything. Yeah, it's a good conversation.
Hey. Should reach out.
Questions.
So go ahead,
I think
Doug.
These are broader. Yeah, generally these were kind of not tied to any specific policy or implementation. In what ways does our current supply of affordable housing, both formal, low, and moderate income housing, and general affordable housing, not meet the unit composition needs in South Kingstown based upon the demographics of individuals in need of affordable housing? We've kind of talked about that a little bit already. For example, do the units being produced currently provide adequate housing for families, single individuals, aging residents, etc., as understood by the AHC? So I think she's just trying to get at where do you see the need, and is there is the housing that's being produced meeting that need? And specifically, where are we not meeting that need?
I think that my comments are that we've always said that, well, in the past year, we've said that 80% family rental housing is what we're looking for. I truly believe, to answer both of these questions, although in the perfect world, it would be in the town centers where there's sewer and water and public transportation, and it would be rental family housing or whatever the specific need is at that specific time. I think that we need to open up to be broader, and we need to, as a town, take affordable housing wherever we can, wherever we can develop
it.
I do. I really do. Even though it might be out on Route 2, which is not the perfect situation for an affordable family or an affordable single individual, or maybe for any individual. I just think that it's really difficult to develop here, and I think that we just have to take it where we can get it, whether it's, I mean, it would be wonderful if we could have a large portion of it and this commercial spaces over Main Street. We've done a couple of those studies in Peacedale and around. That would be wonderful, but it just doesn't seem to, seems to be, it's very, very difficult to develop. So I think that we have to be a little bit broader in our thinking and where it can be located, and I also think that we have to be broader in our perspective, and it just doesn't have to be 80% family rental. We do need one bedrooms for some millennials or for some elderly. So I think that we really have to be versatile in our thinking. I do. Mm-hmm. And personally, I'm also starting to think, because I hear from the developers, that maybe we ought to consider that maybe the 99-year deed restriction is too long. Maybe that is a frightening factor to them.
We've brought that up before.
That has come up many times. Maybe we ought to rethink that and have to go back to 30 years just to get some balls rolling. I mean,
wait, how are they saying that? Because developers develop and then they go away, so things affect them.
Well, I think that I know that we heard it from Jay. If I'm going to have this two-family house, my children may have had it one day, but in 99 years, they're never going to have it. For in 30 years, that could be something that would be feasible. Although, I mean, I totally understand the town's perspective. They would lose that affordable housing in 30 years. But I think for a developer, it's a little bit more frightening. Because you're really kind of giving up that property they're saying forever. And I don't always side with them. But I just think that in a town like South Kingstown, we just have to be really creative in our thinking. Because it's not a Providence where it's really easy to, you know, grab abandoned properties and rehab them and create it. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's an issue.
And the resources are drying up.
I think it's an issue. Suppose we had three extra subdivisions with affordables and they were here for 30 years. It's better than not ever having them. Mm. And the fact of the matter is, we can't count on it, but Rhode Island Housing has bought numerous of the elderly ones when that 30-year was done, where it could go market rate.
Well, actually, that's about a Boston.
Yeah, Paula.
Oh, yes.
Paula.
But, you know, 30 years sounds like a long time.
I totally agree with you. In the perfect world, it should be 99. It should be in village centers on soap, water and sewer. I totally agree with you. But it just seems very difficult to create in a town like South Kingstown.
I worry that if a developer was looking at various towns, I don't know how many towns are at 99, but if, you know, the majority is 30, or 40, would they go there first? Not to mention that we live on the ocean, and so the lot prices are higher than a lot of inland towns.
Land value in South Kingstown is higher than most towns.
Yes. Yeah. When you get back into West Kingston, it gets a little more normal, but you Kingston down to the water, it's a real extra thing for us to deal with for this issue.
Do you guys think there's anything specific about the type of unit that's being developed in South Kingstown that does or does not meet the need?
Need rentals.
But I mean generally like a larger multifamily one bedroom. I'm kind of curious beyond. So the 80% rental is something that would be the ideal goal, but what typology of house? Do you think that is?
We always said family. I mean, it was a family rental, which would make me think two or three bedroom.
Two or three bedroom. I mean, when you think about that, and you were talking about bringing in versatility, I mean, do you think that, one bedrooms would fit a need in South Kingstown, or do you think?
I think for seniors they are, but we were deterred from seniors with based on funding for so long because there was Rhode Island Housing wouldn't fund senior development. So when I think of a one bedroom, I think of seniors or, I mean, millennials are now new and different.
But
they would live in a one bedroom and they don't want to purchase homes.
Young couple.
Yeah, exactly. So.
And that might, I mean, if you're thinking about the demographics and younger people here who are either want to stay in the community or coming as a new family or single person to the university or some other job here in town. I mean, that's a kind of housing that's really, it is really tricky around here because there's so much pressure from the student market and, you know, there's not a lot. So I think there are other people who would be interested in that.
I haven't noticed a lot of developers doing rental housing on anything. We tried to have that conversation. Oh, and the new health center building.
We did
We had a pre-application meeting May, I want to say it was, with Scar Hallberg, who does a lot of development in town, who was proposing, I want to say it was a 19-unit rental in the special management district, where each unit was its own building. So it looked separate, like it was a single family, but all in one parcel and as rentals. So I think there's a little bit of an awareness that rental is appropriate in South Kingstown. We've seen a little bit of it. Same with the Hopkins Green, which was approved a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
They sort of came back with that same idea, where we want to revise our footprint because it was going to be quadplexes.
Those were quadplexes, yeah.
For now, they want to do these sort of single family footprint, but as rental instead of quadplexes.
There is a big demand, a huge demand for rental, small rentals.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a sad situation.
It's a very sad situation.
It's a very expensive way to do it.
Both deeper
where are
they
renting
it?
Yes.
Yeah, those would not necessarily be affordable.
Yeah, they would not be.
But I think when I talked to Scott Hallberg, he was thinking that that would be, you know, for someone who wants a small yard, who wants their own space as opposed to being in a apartment building.
I was talking to Jim Murphy a few weeks ago, and he said he's seen, yeah, I guess he owns some apartments, and he was saying he sees divorced, middle-aged, you know, he thought there was more of a need than we were really acknowledging for the one bedrooms, because there are middle-aged, divorced people who can't afford something larger on their own, and
they're
empty nesters, and they only want their immediate
footprint for a one-bedroom. So if you thought there was more of a need for that, then we really would be seeing. I do. We're working with a developer in East Greenwich, and there's two going up just like that, and that's exactly what they were. It's a lot of divorce situations where the children are kind of shared, so they have like a little den that they could close off as a second bedroom when necessary.
Hmm.
Yep, great need in that town for.
I have a two-family in town that I rent, and it's a two-bedroom, but the second bedroom's really small. I put an ad on Craigslist. Within an hour, I am inundated with people who want to rent it. They offer to pay me more for it, and I get a lot of young couples. I get maybe one or two divorced women who don't have any kids, who just want to be alone in the house. But it's a couple who uses one bedroom. Both apartments are rented to it. And then every time for the last 7 years, every time I put it on Craigslist, it's gone in an hour. Yeah. Honestly, it's just, I'm overwhelmed.
Which makes me wonder why
people
are
begging for
accessory apartments that are allowed by right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Maybe there isn't an acknowledgement by the general community in South Kingstown that there is this need, because I think if people knew that, they'd be putting up apartments over their garages all over the place. Right?
But they'd be putting apartments on, but accessory, it's in your house, so you're not going, and even though it's separate, you're not going to want to rent to anyone usually. Usually it's a family member that you're putting the apartment in for.
Yeah.
But that's okay, because they'd be renting somewhere else in town, right?
Right. So it's elderly.
So they're not taking it from someone else.
Yep.
But maybe it's that the average homeowner in South Kingstown doesn't want the issue of being a tenant,
being a landlord,
because it's sort of beneath them.
Mm-hmm. Or just too much hassle.
Yeah, or that, you know, that it's just, you know, they bought their nice property so that they can enjoy the land and enjoy their home, but not have to worry about another family that's 20 feet that direction.
Mm-hmm.
But it does seem like if you were focused more on the economic side, that there'd be a huge economic gain to realizing that extra rental or housing potential on your property.
Right, but then there's also the expense. So if it's the economic gain, you're putting out an awful lot of money to put
an
extension on.
Yep.
So.
But maybe they had a three-car garage, and they think they're going to use that building for the second unit. Or I mean, there's things like that happen, and as you grow older and retirement's coming along, if the building maybe is there in some form, and they're going to be talking about the money to help get through.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, that does happen. I bought my place 18 years ago with apartments in it, thinking that would be helpful for me when I retire. But you got to manage it. For people who don't want to manage it, you can hire people to do that for you. The money's not going to be just the same, but
All right, the last question on our memo. Does the AHC believe there are any specific areas of town which it feels provide unique opportunities and or are most suitable for the development of future affordable housing?
I can answer that. I might be happy. That was just my opinion. Anywhere you can get them. That's my opinion. That was just my opinion.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think staff would agree, right? You, if you can get a unit, get it.
Got it, right?
Right. But are there ways that we can be better about it? Right? Are there ways that we can get it and in the place we want it? Or, and in the form we want it? So.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, I think, what we need to be strategic about. Figure out what that is.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. If you can get it,
take it.
I guess maybe the way to think about that is, let's assume we have a unit in hand and we get to land it where we want. Where would you want to land it?
Main Street.
Main Street, Wakefield?
Yeah.
Right downtown?
Above the stores.
Yeah, well, that whole stretch there.
I keep driving by the Larchwood, old Larchwood lot, and I'm like, oh, that'd be such a great place for big housing development.
So it is, I mean, basically, it still does come back to the center of town.
Ideally, oh, absolutely. I mean, that would be perfect.
Walkable.
You want it to be where you can access good services and transit.
Right.
You can walk to Brickley's.
Right.
Yeah. Support.
And the view is right.
Yeah.
It feels hot. It has been.
Peacedale is perfect, too. Peacedale is right on the bike path, right near the school.
Yeah. Well, there has been that lot behind Betty's that has been for sale forever, but it's just they have never brought that price down. We've looked at it probably over the past 12 years. We've looked at it a couple of times. They still want a lot of money. They're holding out for, I guess they don't have to sell it.
That's exactly what it is.
I think they don't have to sell it, yeah.
What happened to that piece of property? It was for sale, I want to say, a year ago. It's a multifamily, and it's in Peacedale. It's kind of behind the mill. I think it was yellow, down a dead-end road. I can't remember the name of the road, right near the bike path. I wrote a paper on it, how this needed to be developed and how fitting it was, because you could walk to school, you could walk on the bike path. And it was for sale about a year ago.
Behind the mill, but Peacedale.
So as you're coming around Kingston Pizza and you're going towards the mill, where Thornley's and stuff is, on the right. It's a little road before you get to the mill, on the right.
Where the railroad is?
Is it railroad? It's right. I think it is railroad.
That's
or is there two roads over there?
Peter Moon's road, isn't it?
Yes, it's right down there, down in the back of that, on the end of the dead end road. It's a multifamily house, and they had plans for another house in there. There might have been two buildings.
Oh,
it was perfect.
It's the first time I've ever seen anybody baffle Mark in town.
Converted into apartments. Any unused space in the mill?
Yeah, we talked about that. That he doesn't want any apartments in there. Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You recall paying for a very expensive study to analyze that, just that question.
Mm-hmm.
Sokolov, didn't you?
I don't recall that.
I do.
That does sound familiar. But was that before it was given to?
It's on your shelf.
Yeah, right. It's on your shelf. One of those things that that was just before our time. Mm-hmm. When was that? Was that like?
I think
ago?
You might have been, it was when Murray was looking at it, it just didn't work out for him.
Was it before the new buyer actually took over? Then so now he took over.
Any other items for discussion?
Yes, I was wondering if we could just go over our meeting for when our meeting is for October and November.
So I think we had discussed that we would not be able to meet on our normal night because of the fact that staff are going to be at a meeting.
Okay,
we're actually going to be in a conference, so that would be the 26th.
Okay, and I'm going to be away, so could we do it the 19th?
We talked about, and then the next month, November, the fourth Thursday is Thanksgiving. We talked about the 16th. I believe at our last meeting we might have said, let's keep that penciled in.
Okay.
I don't know.
I think that's what we're doing.
Yeah, November 16th.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
16th, that's Monday.
It's a Thursday. November.
It is a Thursday. I have it in
November.
Yeah, the 7th. November 16th.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I do have that down.
Good.
Okay.
I was like, I cannot do October 16th, nor can I do the 26th.
Yeah, we talked about that last time.
Yeah, we did.
So there's nothing in October, and we're doing November.
Nothing in October.
Was everyone?
Correct.
I don't know if everyone was here, but yeah, we can talk about it. Do you want to talk about it?
Sure, we'll talk about it. So, and as I think Chelsea mentioned this at the start of the meeting, a few people might not have been here for it, but Chelsea is going to become the new staff liaison to the AHC. We're doing a little horse trading that I'm taking the sustainability committee and Chelsea is taking the Affordable Housing Collaborative. So,
Really because I, as the director, I can choose what I want to work on, and I want to work on the affordable housing study. So I'm stealing it from Doug. Shamelessly. Because you know what?
I thought it was us,
do,
Chelsea.
Well, it is you, obviously. You know, I have a lot of crap that I have to deal with, so I should be able to deal with something that I like, right? So that's where we're at. So you'll get me for a while.
Yeah, that'd be
great.
Tough.
You're both welcome.
Fair sustainability, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a good.
Yeah,
for Doug, what's the sustainability?
Yeah.
This wasn't also.
Yeah.
It'll be good.
Yeah. Yeah. Chelsea's real tough. Yeah, she's real tough.
Very tough.
Yeah. Tough personality. Nobody likes her.
Hard to get along with. I am hard to get along with when you make me not like you.
I wanted to mention there was an article in the Narragansett Times on Wednesday, yesterday, about Joe. I don't know how he says his last name. Who's been running the
Joe Beck?
Yes, yeah. And he says in that article that he's going to be with family. He's stepping down, and when he comes back, he'd like to work with affordable housing. So if you know him and you bump into him, he knows about us. I know he does.
Yeah, there was an article in today's Independent.
Yeah.
He was stepping down as the executive director of Welcome.
Was he?
Right. He has, I think it has happened.
Yeah, in the paper today.
That consistent leadership there.
I think he did a good job. You know, he wrote a play last summer. So last summer, last fall, about homelessness, and he wrote some music, and it was at the Contemporary Theater. It was really amazing.
Yeah, I've worked with Joe quite a bit on a couple of different projects.
Yeah.
And he was definitely a passionate, heartfelt guy.
Yeah.
He put his heart into that job.
Yeah.
And so you can appreciate that. And yeah, he was a hard worker, too. He was diligent about trying to find whatever, you know, options he could to improve things.
Yeah.
And I think they were really looking at different kinds of transitional housing and other ways to have some housing for folks that was a little more long-term.
Yeah.
And I suspect that will continue once they get things sorted again.
Yeah.
General FYI, Churchwood's ribbon cutting.
Yeah.
6 November, 11:30 a.m. on site. All are welcome to attend. We'll have cookies.
Charleston.
All right.
Where's that? Oh, it's in Charleston. Where is it? In Charleston.
Development.
Awesome. Cookies. It's my birthday.
Cookies.
You should just go down there for birthday cookies.
That's your birthday.
Yeah.
November
6th. Oh, yeah. Eat all the cookies you can that day.
It is the one day you can eat everything you want.
I'll send.
Oh, and since we're talking about things, you all should have gotten an email about a training on open meetings, ethical stuff.
Yes.
We're putting it on. We have two brand new boards and commissions, the Sustainability Committee, the Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Committee. We thought that was a good reason to sort
that sounded
of
like a great idea.
Training.
Yeah.
So it's basically open to every board and commission that the town runs, from our department, recreation, wherever. But it should be informative for all of us, all staff. It's going to be too. So
it's only going to be an hour.
About an hour,
yeah.
That's what we're hoping for now. Open meetings, procedural best practices, and then ethical stuff. And
that's next month, right? Mid-month?
It is October 17th.
Okay.
Will there be cookies?
Unless I bake some, maybe bring them.
You want to buy them early, Jeff, and bring some over?
We'll see. Maybe I'll have some cookies.
Charlestown is buying the cookies for the church.
Oh.
Yeah, our cookie budget is...
It's really tight.
Our budget in general is pretty tight.
Yeah, I just have to tell the HTC when we're talking about, let's get plaques for the people. Yeah, our plaque budget is real tight.
We want to get cookies instead. Okay.
Alrighty then.
Did we
we lose Cheryl to adjourn.
Cheryl, we'll be right back to end this.
Move to approve.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Recently, you actually don't have to make a motion to adjourn.
We don't.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I have a lot of people that I tell them that, and they like to keep it.
They know, right? Why? Who's going to say no to adjourning?
Yeah. Right. No one will, but just people like
people
the
were passively adjourning the meeting anyway.
I think
so.
After a while, chairs feel uncomfortable saying I'm ending the meeting. They get used to the fact of asking permission to end the meeting.
We don't need your permission.
I was going to say to adjourn. I vote to adjourn before I left.